This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
I'm back.
From Israel.
The land of tiny, tiny urinals.
Really? Is that what it is? Lots of smalls. There must be lots of smalls in Israel.
I've never been to a place with such tiny... It was almost like a movie. Each your bathroom I went into had a tinier one than before.
Wow.
I didn't think it was possible to be any tinier. There'd be an even smaller one.
Wow. Good for the kids.
God, they must be accurate.
So you took your whole family.
Yeah.
And all of your kids...
Mm-hmm.
And you and I between us, we've got like several Premier League squads worth of kids.
A good youth development system.
Very good youth development system at Men in Blazers. How did they all enjoy it?
I've got to say, Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
Amazing youth culture, which was surprising and magical.
It's like Israel's Burnley.
Amazing food.
Yeah.
Unbelievable food. I had one of the best meals I've had in a long time at a restaurant called North Abraxas.
Whoa.
But the highlight... Mm-hmm. Was going to go and watch Maccabi Tel Aviv play Hapoel Be'er Sheva, which of course everyone listening knows is first versus second, the top of the table clash, the Passover Classico, which at Pippin Ain't Teasy tweeted.
Did you say
us,
the Passover Classico?
They said somebody tweeted, Pippin at Teasy tweeted us, say it's the Classico in, which I hope sticks. I think that's fabulous. It was in Tel Aviv. No corporate boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very old school atmosphere. Probably about 15, 18,000 people there.
Yeah.
Very basic. But oh my God, did the passion. It reminded me of the Premier League in the old days. Do you remember when there used to be passion in the stadium before the Emirates, the libraries? It was amazing.
Oh, there's still passion there, Rog. But it's good. You saw some proper Israeli football.
I did. My favourite part was the halftime.
Mm-hmm.
The Maccabi Tel Aviv are sponsored by Nivea.
Mm-hmm.
And they had two
for men.
They had two fans, and they had them stand at the halfway pit, line, and they put a cone on either side of the penalty box
and a tiny urinal.
And I wish that would have made it. Even, and then, but they put a ball on the penalty spot, so these two fans had to sprint as fast as they could around their cone, and then the first one to get to the penalty spot and kick the ball in would win the competition. They sprinted around these cones, and then they got to the penalty. It was a dead heat when they got to the cones. They both kind of crushed in towards the ball.
Yeah.
And then they both left the ground just about 2 foot from before the ball and just took each other out completely.
Yeah.
Just leapt into the air kung fu style and just both of them. It was like with ankle breaking tackles on each other, rolled around in agony. The ball kind of trickled in off one of them. I don't know which one. It was the most Israeli thing I've ever seen in my life.
They should import that at Everton. They should have Morales and Baines should do that to compete for penalties.
They do it in games. All for one little bottle of Nivea male hand cream. It was the most Israeli thing I've ever seen in my life. But while we were, I was away.
Yeah.
NBC. What a weekend.
NBC went to the UK. They took everyone, Rog. They took Rebecca. They took both Robbies.
Yep.
Two of them. They took Kyle.
I don't think either Robbie knew about the relationship with Kyle. I think that must have been a bit awkward.
They didn't know that the other one knew that they'd sometimes work with Kyle.
Kyle swapping.
And didn't take us, but we're okay with that.
We're okay with it.
You
we're
had okay to with go it. To we Israel. Understand. I was in South Carolina playing golf and watching a lot of the Masters. But it was interesting, Rog.
Yeah, I mean, I really admire all of them. It was phenomenally well done, the way they brave that nation of moment. And then bravely...
And the weather.
Hung out in gantry after gantry.
Gantry.
They've got some good weather. Yeah, the Americans seem to be fascinated by how often NBC talks about gantries. It's all we do in England.
Yeah, the
we
press gantry.
We drink tea and talk about gantries.
Yeah.
But what do you think? I love seeing them over there. I loved it. I mean, what is it they used to say about the GIs? The Americans being overfed, oversexed, and over here.
Yeah, overpaid, I think.
Whatever it was. Mark Dolce wrote to us and said, only an American company would propose to ship its contingent of on-air talent to the UK to broadcast live from Burnley, the Cleveland of the North. I thought it was beautiful.
But it also shows you what an amazing job they do when they're back in the United States, in Connecticut.
It's funny you say that.
It feels almost, I would say. And it was brilliantly done and it was well promoted and I think it got a lot of attention to the Premier League. And
massive.
And all four of them, they had a great time. And I think it was lovely for like Arlo and Lee Dixon having them all over. So
having
they
more
all felt
people
like
to talk to.
Having their, so it all felt like one family. But it does show what an amazing job they do up there in Connecticut. It almost feels bigger every weekend when they're in Connecticut than it did feel when they went over to the UK.
Yeah, I mean, I love the Stamford, Connecticut coverage.
Yeah.
It kind of, they also, that kind of secretly reinforces the sense that they're watching alongside all of us from this American POV.
Yeah.
Like we're all together, one little football watching club. But looking at the coverage of NBC over in America in the English press, you kind of realise that the secret football watching club is actually getting very, very big. The Daily Mail, they wrote a piece about how the US English Premier League watching audience, this is unbelievable to me, Dave, is on pace to eclipse the English one very, very soon. United's 2-1 win over Arsenal last November drew 1.41 million people. And the average English audience on a week-to-week basis on Sky is just 1.48 million. Three out of the four most English Premier League watch games in America have been this season. Mm-hmm. So I think the English Premier League is starting to see that their future is a kind of English-located league, which is going to be eating more and more into the American market.
England is about one-fifth, maybe less than one-fifth of the size of the United States. It's tough for us to find quite as many people to go and watch in the United States, but the point is still taken, Rog. So I think our overall point we're trying to make about NBC's coverage is it was fantastic, but you don't necessarily have to go to the location of an international sporting event to go and make it successful. Sometimes we could just stay in our panic room in the crap part of Soho and cover anything that's happening in any part of the world. And what I'm saying isn't at all self-serving or directed at any sports networks who might want to hire us to go and cover international events so that we could stay at home and do it from here.
You can pay us in pie.
Yeah, exactly. It's very, very true, as long as we don't have to leave.
I mean, amidst all the drama of NBC being over there, it was a lot. One of the big storylines of the weekend was lost a little bit.
Yeah, we lost a friend this week, Rog. Very sad. DirecTV has pulled the Rob Lowe commercials. I don't quite know. I was at home last night watching NBC, and in one of those places where we would have been introduced to a new Rob Lowe character.
Another friend.
Instead, it was the blonde on a horse.
Talking horse.
The talking blonde on the talking horse.
I think the blonde is Rob Lowe then.
Really?
It's really sexy Rob Lowe.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, or the really horsey talky Rob Lowe. He could be the horse
The charismatic equine Rob Lowe.
Apparently, there isn't that much truthiness or truth in the claims made. Apparently, in the claims made by DirecTV in those Rob Lowe commercials, they've defended themselves by saying, really, these are comedy commercials. Is it reasonable to believe that any audience member wouldn't understand that in a comedy construct, the claims made can't be taken too seriously?
What was not truthful that he didn't really have puny arms.
Exactly.
If he didn't have puny arms, he shouldn't be on television. That's not fair. That's taken advantage.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the Council of Better Business Bureau who shut them down.
Yeah.
I've got to be honest, never mind the untruthiness.
I hope they haven't ever watched our show, Rog.
Never mind the untruthiness. I've got to be honest, the commercials, the more they kept thinking them through and pushed the boundaries, the more they kind of shaded towards open mockery of mental illness. But they've gone. They were really part of the fabric, I think, of the Premier League watching experience, and I have to say.
I have to defend them. I don't think that they were that harsh. I think they were funny, and I think they were brilliantly done.
I found watching Super Paranoid Rob Lowe honestly harrowing. It's like an Albert Mayles documentary from like the 1970s. I found it truly disturbing. I will say, I imagine them going into a war room at DirecTV when they knew their ads were going to get pulled and having to do like a brainstorming session. When like, we've had one of these great buzzed up campaigns. How do we replace it? And quickly. And they just like talking chimpanzees. No. Let's put Danica Patrick in a bikini. You can imagine them. Get that gingy woman from the Wendy's ads that trots all around like a gingy virgin. And they're like, no. The one guy in the corner probably was quiet for most of the meeting, and then he just went, blondes, boobs,
bikinis, talking horse. No, wait a minute. That's not how it was. It was on horseback. And somebody else sitting next to him started to get into it, realizing that the pitch was going down well. And the horse is talking. And people are like, yes. This seems to be the work of a different creative agency, is my only point. I'm not sure.
It's got the fingers of a different...
It's got the fingerprint of a different agency working on this campaign.
And the one Lowe left standing, David.
Yeah.
Rebecca Lowe.
Rebecca Luhr.
Or as I like to think of her, super intelligent, articulate, charismatic Robley.
Yeah.
Talking about...
She had a lovely suntan in the UK.
She did. She must have got that on the flight over there.
Yeah, exactly. It wouldn't have happened in Burnley. No doubt about it.
Talking about amazing women.
Yeah.
Natural blondes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to segue a little bit.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you. I want to get your counsel. I'm befuddled.
Yeah.
A little bit. Madonna swapping spit with Drake.
You mean kissing Drake?
Now kissing is what Mourinho and Van Gaal do. This was seductive, full mouth, long tonguey kissing. Yeah. Why would Drake agree?
I know exactly
to do this.
What is in this for Drake?
Yes. She's got form. She's Drake got previous. She does it. She's out in the media. Yeah. Things are dark. She'll start, Britney Spears, come over here and sit on my lap and kiss me, love.
Yeah.
Britney Spears, Dire Straits.
Yeah, that was a good moment. We understand there was something in it for both artists at that point.
I watch this. Coachella. Drake on. Don't watch it. Do not watch it. This is like, I'm going to describe it so you don't have to watch it. It's like an ISIS beheading. Do not go and watch it when I talk about it.
Yeah.
Drake's on a seat in like this kind of T-shirt, cut-off T-shirt.
Yeah.
And she just snaps his head back and I can't even find words, to be honest.
Uh-huh.
Put it this way. Last week, Louis van Gaal.
Yeah.
Said that at halftime he kissed Anders Herrera in the locker room.
Uh-huh.
Because he'd shot so beautifully in the way Van Gaal had told him. And after reading that story, I racked my brains to try and think about a less motivational technique that I could think of as a football manager than being kissed by Louis van Gaal.
If I do this right, I'm going to get kissed by Louis van Gaal.
And then I stayed up all night composing a shortlist of people I'd less like to kiss than Louis van Gaal.
Okay, this is interesting. How many people on the shortlist?
I could only think of four, and I stayed up for about 8 hours.
Okay, number one.
Charles Manson.
Okay, good. Number two.
Just as obvious, Tara Reid.
Yes, similar. Number three.
Al Gore.
Number four.
That's as good as I got. Ben Drake kissed Madonna. And I realised she'd beat everybody on that list.
Four people. Okay, go ahead.
No, Al Gore, I still would prefer to kiss Madonna than Al Gore,
okay,
probably.
Okay, got it.
But she top up. But why, Dave? Yeah. Why?
Well, I tell you, I have one theory. A couple of weekends ago, went out to my house out in Bridgehampton, and I took the kids for a walk, and we walked down to the lanes behind our house to see the very nice house that Madonna is building out there. And what I'm thinking is, it's at least 6 weeks of a summer rental in the Hamptons, gratis, for Drake. For swapping spit with Madonna. That's the best I've got, that there was a sort of a real estate exchange, a rental exchange system.
It wasn't a kiss,
system.
It was a real estate.
It was a real estate transaction, is my theory.
So the only theory I have, Dave, is, you know how Justin Timberlake briefly went out with, what's her name?
What, Alyssa Milano?
Alyssa Milano, Dave.
Okay.
And when he went out with her, he said he couldn't believe that he was able to kiss Alyssa Milano, who he idolised when he was like 8, 9, 10.
Uh-huh.
And I bet you, part of me thinks Drake was like, well, I don't really want to do this for professional reasons. It's not good for brand Drake.
Yeah.
But 8, 9, 10-year-old Drake, who used to probably idolise Papa Don't Preach Madonna.
This would be like me kissing Peter Osgood.
It would be like me kissing Daphne from Scooby-Doo. I wouldn't turn that down. She wanted to resuscitate her career.
Yeah.
If you're listening, Daphne.
Daphne from Scooby-Doo. Interesting.
Yep. She was a childhood hero of mine.
Mm-hmm.
As was actually someone who passed away.
Okay.
Last week. We've lost
interesting turn.
We've lost a couple of friends this week, David.
Who
we should mention. Yeah. Roscoe P. Coltrane.
Yeah.
From the Dukes of Hazzard. James Best, the World War II vet turned actor.
Yeah.
Died since we've been away. So it's Gunter Grass.
Oh.
But most sadly of all, David, I should say this before we get into the football.
Yeah.
Very sad. Right now, about Eduardo Galeano.
Yeah, he held up a little sign on a TV show last night.
He's one of my favourite Uruguayan authors / social activists.
Yeah.
He's a beautiful... If you've not read one of the Soccer in Sun and Shadow, the most animated, concise history of the evolution of football, he was a beggar for good soccer. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful way of describing the itch that I think a lot of us bear. And he felt compelled, even though he was an amazing historian and author, to craft a slim volume that would let what he said, fans of reading to lose their fear of soccer and fans of soccer to lose their fear of books. He wrote of Maradona, he keeps the ball tied to his feet. Of Messi, he said, he keeps the ball inside his shoe. And I made a movie with my mate John Hock, in which we interviewed Galliano about the 1950 World Cup. And in the wake of that, I got the chance to interview him for an article. The experience was one of the joys of my life. And he said, I'm attracted to soccer's capacity for beauty. When well played, the game is a dance with a ball. Even though professional soccer has become more about business and less about the game itself, I still believe football is a party for the legs that play it and for the eyes that watch it.
Oh, party for the legs. I love that. We've got a packed show. We're going to break down United's 4-2 demolition of City in the Manchester Derby. Tim Sherwood's triumphant return to White Hart Lane. We'll preview the Von Trapp's upcoming clash with Mexico and the mighty Miguel Herrera. And we welcome to the pod executive producer of The Walking Dead and a big Arsenal fan, Rog Gunner, Gale Ann Hurd. Okay, Rog, to the football. Time to crack open the Guinness.
Oh, I'm so excited for this. I've not had my lunch.
Cheers, Rog.
To Daphne.
Okay, we're now 32-38 of the way through the Premier League season. That reduces, Rog, to 16-19. It's only 3-19 left. The title chase has turned into Grey's Anatomy. The only reason we tolerate its predictability is because we've been invested since the beginning. But the race for the top four is more House of Cards, filled with plot twists as unexpected and unthinkable as a Chris Smalling goal. First up, Manchester United 4, Manchester City 2, Rog. The 169th playing of the Manchester Derby, a tradition like no other, sees United dismantle their crosstown rivals. Goals from Ashley Young, Marouane Fellaini, Juan Mata, and the aforementioned Chris Smalling lift United 4 points above City, keep them in third place, 1 point behind Arsenal. Oh,
we should say a word about that. 169th Manchester Derby, a tradition like no other. So I love America, Dave, because it's a land, if you say something enough times, it becomes true.
I mean, the Masters is an amazing golf tournament, and the action this weekend was phenomenal, watching Jordan Spieth win it.
Tex and Harry Kane.
Oh, it was amazing. Problems in Sector 3.2. But a lot of the bluster about the tradition seems a little fabricated, Rog.
And when they talk about a tradition like no other, I do wonder what people who believe in ritual circumcision and Hajj or Sufi whirling.
Yeah.
What think of when they say that, going to commercial break.
Yeah.
Tradition like no other.
Yeah.
There's plenty of...
Or people like me who believe in the British monarchy. It's very... It's a little different. However, it is an amazing golf tournament. And this young man, Jordan Spieth, I know I'm a bigger golf fan than you are, Rog, but we've seen the emergence of a massive, massive star golfer. Golf needs this so badly. They need a rivalry for Rory McIlroy. They now have it with Jordan Spieth. He's an amazing golfer, a really, really lovely young man, great for the game. I watched him win the juniors just down the road at Bedminster, where I used to be a member, and he was just a stone-cold killer as a teenager, and he's taken that into his adult game.
You're
not
a bigger golf fan than me. I just happen to like Lee Trevino and Fuzzy Zeller more than you do.
They're not playing that much anymore.
This game, they are in my imagination.
Yeah,
I mean, talking about imagination, this game was a clash of narrative. Uh-huh. City had won the last four league games between the two teams, but Van Gaal's United, five-match winning streak they brought into it. And this City team, they were neck and neck with Chelsea at the top of the table in January, but they'd won only 4 out of 11 since New Year's Day. Pellegrini was talking about a title defence that had gone into the garbage. I knew City were doomed before kickoff, Dave, when Vincent Kompany tried to psych himself up in the handshakes by punching Joe Hart, the comic figure, Joe Hart in the chest. Joe Hart tried to pull what I think he believes to be his manly war face. But the two of them, they just look like an amateur dramatics version of George and Lenny in Steinbeck's Mice of Men, guys like us that work on ranches with the loneliest guys in the world. And I realised that this was tiny City, Dave. Once again, Manchester's underdogs against United, who are absolutely resurgent once more.
Yeah, Manchester City, it's funny. You know, I sometimes sit in my house, and I look out into the garden in the middle of winter, and there's snow everywhere, and it's freezing, and it's icy. And the idea of summer is almost
unimaginable when you look out there and see winter. And the same, you look out to it in summer and you can't even imagine winter. I feel this way about Manchester City. There have been times this season you've watched them play and they've been so good. They've been so clinical. They've been able to score so many goals at will so easily. The idea of them being just crap was unimaginable. But then you watch them play this game this weekend and you see how crap they are. And to imagine some of the emphatic wins they've had this season seems inconceivable.
As an Everton fan, the notion of looking out of a window and seeing a garden...
Yeah, it's inconceivable. But I take your point.
Yeah, but I've
come over, take a look at my garden.
The twist in this game, though, was despite the absolute thrashing, bare-bottom spanking City received, was that they started off so well. They started off almost like a Coke can that had been shaken up. They pressed, they chased, they harried. Milner playing behind Aguero. Navas broke through within 6 minutes. Mm-hmm. Said on the show last night, he left a barely discernible little brown trail behind him as he trundled towards De Gea. A sure sign that even he didn't believe there was even a second when he was going to score. By the way, about him, he's so the symbol of this City. I don't know how he keeps making the team. Yeah, he's got beautiful eyes. Mm-hmm. Seems to be his only real skill on the football field. But then a couple of minutes later, David Silva did what he couldn't. He banked it home off Kun Aguero. 1-0 City. I mean, an opening...
I think it was a pass, Rog.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was an intentional rebound. Like a backboard.
Yeah, it's like that bar billiards game where you have to knock things off things.
You seem to slap it against the kind of it's huge, enormous buttocks. 1-0 mm-hmm. City. I mean, it was an opening so shocking. It almost seemed to be like a trailer for Game of Thrones that was starting in the nighttime. I mean, it was only George R. R. Martin builds up United to slay them, I thought.
I was not on Twitter at that point, but I think you know what I would have tweeted at that point. Too early, Rog. Way too early. You don't want to go into the lion's den, into the theatre of dreams, and score after 8 minutes. Probably the biggest mistake they made all afternoon.
Well, it's true, because this United, they're not your grandfather's Chevrolet. City continued to press. De Gea went route one. And for the first time, City's defence was tested and it immediately just crumbled.
Yeah, ball breaks to Herrera. Herrera crosses the ball in. Ashley Young. Ashley Young, a player reborn in the second half of this season under Louis van Gaal, finds a way to finish. Actually a very good finish. Almost lost control of the ball and then just put it in. Instinctive finish. And 1-1.
It's not just him. I mean, what's amazing, most Americans only know him as a man who can catch bird poo in his mouth during the game. He's actually, they realise now, quite a good football player. He's had a late career renaissance of Mickey Rourkean proportion. But the core of this team, Dave, Blint, Mata, Rojo, Fellaini and Young, they're all flops done good this season. Mm-hmm. It's as if LVG found them as discards on the tailor's floor. Yes, he was the tailor. Yes, he discarded them. But he's now picked all of them up again. And he's built something that seems ever more cohesive. By the way, the one thing I love most about the United goal was the reaction on the United bench. After being slapped across the face like a naughty schoolchild for several weeks, Ryan Giggs has now wised up. The ball went in. And perhaps it was Pavlovian. But all he did when it went in, he just put as much distance as he could between himself.
Smart man.
And Van Gaal.
Doesn't want to get hit.
Oh, you've got to proactively anticipate the slaps. Young, key to the second, Dave, the Fellaini goal.
Yeah, fantastic ball in. Defence might have done a little better, but you know what he's known for is he's got that right foot. He puts an enormous amount of curl and dip on the ball, and it was a pinpoint accurate cross to the very, very large toilet brushian Belgian head of Marouane Fellaini. Marouane Fellaini just goes right through Joe Hart with the powerful header.
You could almost see the question forming in a desperate cliché's mind as that ball floated over him and he was about to be crushed by Fellaini. Mm-hmm. Remind me why I left Arsenal again. Yeah. At Dogfish Bradford tweeted, if I told you last year that Fellaini would dominate Yaya Toure in a derby, would you have said I was insane or daft?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I mean, we've said this before, that had you shown us United's starting 11 at the beginning of the season, we would have said, this team, and you've got Di Maria and Falcao on the bench, you're going to destroy, you're going to win the Premier League going away. He's always had quality. It's almost he's benefited from having had such a poor start, because now he looks even better after the poor start with what he's moulded this team into. And the fans aren't obsessed with winning a Premier League this year. The momentum in Manchester is all about,
we're going to go and take it. We're going to make a real title charge next season.
I mean, the difference for me in this game was that Fellaini was trying. Yeah, yeah, Touré, not so much.
Yeah.
He seemed to be using the game to unleash on the world an avant-garde impersonation of Jose Altidore if Josie was crap, which of course he's not.
Yeah.
Carrick, so imperious, distributing, probing, leading. De Gea, massive when needed. Joe Hart, not so much. And Vincent Kompany, Dave, it pains me to say this again, but his decline. It's quicker than any man I've seen since Jamie Lannister had his sword hand cut off. I mean, he was lucky to only get a yellow card after scything down Daily Blimp. I mean, he's just filled with this kind of self-loathing. Outside of Peggy Olson on Mad Men, I've never seen anything like it.
You know, last night, Rog, on the TV show, we played an interview on Manchester United's fan TV channel. I think it's called Full Time Red Devils, where they interview this. He only looks about 10 or 11-year-old kid
11.
About what he thought. And he was brilliant. His analysis was actually brilliant. The Manchester United, they look like a team of players. They're playing for the
11,
badge.
11 best, best friends.
11 best friends.
We outpassion them. We outpassion Man City.
Man City certainly do not look like 11 best friends. This looks like 11 guys put together who don't really want to be not only playing with each other, they don't necessarily really want to be on the field
at all.
That's
so true, Dave. Because with Kompany's decline, City have no leadership. I mean, I think there's this spectacular second half collapse in the season. A core of it seems something that's culturally wrong in that locker room. With Kompany hobbled, who are the leaders of that team? On the field, when things were going dark, who was talking? Who was shouting?
Instead, well, it's got to be Joe Hart. You know it's Joe Hart.
But yeah, but he's the madman on the subway that you kind of move to another carriage.
Yeah, that's been the great benefit of seeing the tunnel cam, is that we just know how insane Joe Hart is.
Yeah, I mean, the City just seem to stumble passively to their fate. Their only bright spot in the game, Dave.
Yeah.
James Milner's it.
Yeah, that was amazing. I
it was educational.
I had another look at it last night. And
if you didn't see it, on the back of his neck.
Yeah, I looked at it in full HD.
He was carrying
a
passenger. It was like how to get ahead in advertising.
I said it's like a parasite. For a second, I did think that this was a member of Manchester City's youth academy who's being carried by James Milner's neck in order to gain some on-field experience.
Which is not a crazy notion, because it was talking to him all the way through the game.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an educational moment. I've since learned that Mark Wahlberg, Lily Allen, Carrie Underwood, Chandler Bing, they all have three nipples.
Yeah.
Harry Styles has four nipples, and I'm not referring to his bandmates. Let me ask you this.
Good one. Boom, boom.
Let me ask you a serious question about this, David, because I've thought about it a lot. What would you rather go through life with?
Yeah.
Milner zit, hashtag Milner zit. Or Avram Glazer's hairpiece.
Oh, it was Avram Glazer. I think we identified the wrong Glazer last night. Well, definitely.
All Glazers look the same to us. You should describe it.
Avram Glazer walked out last night at the beginning of the game. We showed him in the tunnel. He's a bald man who still has hair at the back of his head that he's grown long and pulled into a ponytail.
Like George Bluth.
I definitely take the ponytail because you can cut it off. The zit, you can't do it. It's a zit the size of the thing on Milner's neck. You can't do anything about, Rog.
That's crazy. You go zit every time.
It's a boil.
Yes.
That awful word. Can I tell you one of the worst words in the English
Lance
language?
That boil.
Lancing. The concept of boil lancing.
Oh, I hate it when the doctor
horrible.
Says, bend over, I need to lance that boil.
I need to lance that boil.
I hate that almost more than the word kudos, which is possibly
Medieval jousting lance would be interesting. But with the way they lance,
God, it's so wrong though, Dave.
Yeah.
I'd go with the zit. I'd go with Milner's zit every single day of the week.
Yeah.
Over the Avram Glazer hairpiece. But you can theoretically cut it off.
Yeah.
But the zit, Milner's zit, will go away with treatment and God's help to kind of eradicate this terrible curse. But the Glazer ponytail, Dave. It's a reflection of a very dark state of mind. It comes with baggage.
Well, it's the baggage, as he said last night on the TV show. It comes from being super rich and super powerful and having mates who just say, oh, Avram, you look amazing. Oh, what you've done with your hair. You look
something
good.
Something different about you today, Avram.
Yeah. Oh, you look so good. Oh, the way you're doing your hair, that's good.
I've got to tell you, can we just give some respect to the ground staff at Old Trafford?
Yeah.
Because you've got to watch you've got to Google this or watch our show to watch this footage. He kind of breezes in. There's like 12 security guards and just general ground staff and the groundsman.
Not
probably
a single one of them cracks up laughing at his hair. Is that what you were going to say? So good.
He's surrounded by people, all of whom are just like unbelievable facial muscle control. Uh-huh. It's probably what he looked for on their resume instinctively.
Yeah. I watched the TV show when I got home last night, Rog, and just the fact that we never, ever mentioned the fact that you were wearing a ponytail ever since we did that segment just went unmentioned. You did look, I must say, though, it suited you. You look quite good with that. You might want to consider growing out the hair at the back of your head
having a ponytail. I also had an enormous Milner zit put on the back of my neck, but the cameras couldn't pick that up.
Couldn't get it.
So that was the highlight for City.
Yeah.
The game over Mata. Yeah. With his run, offside, schmoffside, for such a little cutie, he can do whatever he wants, in my mind. It was a remarkable finish. If you compare Navas's first half, kind of wilting impotence in the first 5 minutes, and then watch Mata's finish, it's like it's like he'd watched Joe Hart game tape and he knew he could nutmeg the ball home between his legs. And the game became a routine kind of memory of how I remember, and American fans who are newer to the game will not believe this, but every single Manchester derby I watched before the Shape took them over in September 2008 kind of felt like this. And that's what is amazing to me about Manchester City. I still pity them, David, despite all their riches, despite all of their kind of new form. The muscle memory of their old incarnation as this perpetually hapless, always hopeful other half. I feel vicarious pain as an Everton fan for Manchester City.
You feel solidarnosc with them.
In my eyes, they live the life described by Picasso as his dream, which is to live like a poor person, but with lots of money.
Well, I feel pain for Pellegrini. You just look at him haunted, just this perpetually red-eyed. He seems to be terribly suffering from terrible allergies to something up
he's
there
roomy.
In Manchester. And I don't think there's anything he could have done with this team and with this squad.
You say that though, Dave, because Sheikh Mansour, he's poured in over $1.4 billion into this team. They were meant to dominate Manchester with ease. They were meant to have dominated Europe by now.
Yeah.
And they're still, what are they now? They're an erratic work in progress with a glut of deadwood and a managerial carousel. And they're still plagued by existential questions.
Yeah.
I mean, I had one of the longest nights of my life in Israel.
Can I just say though, I do think it could get worse for Manchester City. This is Pellegrini won the title with them last season, a title which actually I think Chelsea or Liverpool should have won that title last year. I think he managed to manage that team really successfully through last season to go and do it. It could get worse for Manchester City.
Oh, Davo, City fans, listen to what Davo's saying. Start this campaign, hashtag Sheikh Mansour out. That's what you do if you're a Newcastle fans. All right, Chelsea fans, United fans, let's create lots of fake Twitter accounts and get hashtag Sheikh Mansour
out
trending. Let's do that one. I mean, I had one of the longest nights of my life in Israel. My four-year-old, he got a terrible, terrible stomach flu.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I stayed up all night with him in a hotel bathroom. It's terrible being sick. It's worse to be sick when you're away in a strange hotel room.
Yeah.
And he went to the toilet every 20 minutes for 12 hours. And when the morning light came into the bedroom, I looked up and over the hotel bath, and it had 14 pairs of tiny soiled underpants hanging on the side of the bathtub. And through my exhausted eyes, I looked at them and I immediately thought of City's 2015 record.
Yeah. You just described parenthood so accurately. It was just genius.
But it's what I thought of. I thought Manchester City. Mm-hmm. They've lost four of their last six Premier League games. They'd only lost three times in their first 26 Premier League games this season.
Mm-hmm.
And that haunting extreme close-up shot of Pellegrini's eyes, David.
Can't stop thinking about
his mouth covered by Old Trafford red brick raw.
Mm-hmm.
I found it to be just humanly as affecting as John Coffey's execution in Greenmount.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a tough post-season meeting for him.
Yeah, I mean, they've pre-season, they've already kind of put out briefing journalists, if City fall into a dogfight for that top four place, he's going to be sent to the knackers yard.
Yeah.
Patrick Vieira, Arsenal legend, turned City youth development coach, ready to step in as an interim. I mean, City's next manager and their incoming blockbuster moves, see Paul Pogba and even rumoured Raheem Sterling, who we'll talk about in a minute. That is going to be the story of the off-season.
Yeah, well, they're going to have a lot of competition for both of those signings for another team that play in blue in London.
14 Rog. Little tiny pairs of underpants.
Yeah, it's just haunting. Yes, they sit in fourth place, Rog, just 4 points ahead of Liverpool now after their demolition of Newcastle. And they're in a dogfight, no question about it. They're in a dogfight for the European places based on this form. QPR, 0. Chelsea, 1. A tenacious Hoops performance comes undone in the 88th minute. Rob Green's woefully short punt, it's a crazy goal kick, Rog, was collected by Eden Hazard, who marauded down the left, played a combination with Oscar, and slid it to the masked Cesc Fabregas, who scored with Chelsea's only shot on target. Chelsea remains 7 points clear, Rog.
We have a game in hand. What an odd game. First half was both gripping and dull in equal measure. Mm-hmm. QPR, they're always up for this derby, David.
Oh.
I used to live in DC.
Yeah.
And the City paper, which was then edited by the late, great David Carr, annually would have a cover story, which is a better city, Washington or New York? And they do like this pages of analysis. And then I moved to New York and I was shocked to find there's not a single person in New York City who is agonizing over this debate. That's how I feel about when I watch QPR play Chelsea. For QPR,
That is a brilliant analogy.
They are so revved up to play. Mourinho said before the game, mm-hmm. He said a derby's a derby with all the emotion that creates around it. And because we have so many derbies in London,
yeah,
it's harder, he claimed, for London teams to win the league. But they were so revved up at QPR, trying to release Charlie Austin and Bobby Zamora, who lacked the pace to break three. And other than that, their game plan seemed to revolve around shooting at Courtois from ridiculous angles and distances. Because mm-hmm. as Charlie Adam has now proved with his 65-yard Kyle Beckham-esque wonder strike, it's a waste of time to shoot at Courtois from less than 65 yards, right, David?
Yeah. Yeah, Chelsea, all the same problems that have plagued them for this second half of the season. Very tired-looking players, not gelling particularly well. Players sort of afraid to go and express themselves. This very overplayed, under-rotated squad. No injections of new players like we've seen at Liverpool, at Manchester United, at Arsenal. Just the same old players going through the motions, trying to hold on to go and win this Premier League. And when the goal came, Rog, yes, it was a huge mistake from Rob Green. That crazy attempt, the way that we see many Premier League goalkeepers try this goal kick, and we see it fail as often as it succeeds, but they sort of go ahead of it and they try to kick it almost with a trailing leg to sort of like loft a high one and to get it to come straight down. It goes woefully short and it's picked up. And the goal is one of those attempts you think, why doesn't Eden Hazard do that all game? It's the kind of move that he seems to be able to do at will. Creates the goal, Fabregas masked, visor down, scores, celebrates, visor up, and a real sense of relief in another part of West London, Rog.
Yeah, I mean, why create chances for yourself when your opposing goalkeepers keep gifting you goals? I think that's Chelsea's problem. They just don't need to do anything. They just know that they will receive it. The last three matches,
it's been written,
they've had three points thanks to goalkeeping errors. Yeah. Hull's Alan McGregor, Stoke's Azamir Begovic, a very intelligent, charming, wonderful star of the goalkeepers' union that played on NBC and will continue to play over the next couple of weeks. QPR's Rob Green have all given them a helping hand. Jose Mourinho, he'd have a word for it if it happened to one of his opponents, which is conspiracy. I felt terrible for QPR.
However, I would say that Chelsea do apply pressure and apply pressure and apply pressure and apply pressure and apply pressure. And when you apply pressure constantly through 90 plus minutes of a game, you do tend to eke out those
mistakes. What's so amazing about this Chelsea team, because they have, if you could craft a stat, and Paul Carr, if you're listening, on the team that gives tiny teams the most false hope, mm-hmm. Chelsea have just excelled in it. I mean, Jose Mourinho's most magnificent and sadistic stunt this season may be to have given Arsene Wenger any kind of false hope. Because if you're an Arsenal fan, watching them kind of grind out the clock against QPR without any ability to do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, Cesc Fabregas, who scored the winner, has been ground down by the season. Mm-hmm. They were trying to play the long ball, but the problem was they had Drogba up front, the fraying rope bridge of a hamstring that is. Diego Costa has finally snapped. Luke Remy has decided to be injured. And watching Drogba, Davo, trot around like an old man with hemorrhoids on the field, it broke my heart.
Yeah.
Starting to remind me of Boxer
yeah.
in Animal Farm, a man who valiantly fought in the Battle of the Cowshed and the Battle of the Windmill mm-hmm. and then limped around. And watching him limp around in the final minutes, it's like that scene where Boxer was sent off to the knacker's yard. I had a tear in my eye when I read that book as a child, and I had a tear in my eye as Drogba hobbled off at the final whistle.
Meanwhile, Chelsea's kids, Rog, the under 21, under 19 team, whatever it is, the young guys, none of whom should be able to make the starting lineup for Chelsea, however well they play at every single youth level, went off and they won the UEFA, the biggest tournament in UEFA, the biggest tournament in Europe. They beat Donetsk in the final, Rog, and yet none of them can go and make.
How can they break into a team that needs one shot, one goal yeah. to get 3 points yeah, and be seven right. points clear? They're you're your 2014-15 champions, ladies and gentlemen. Chelsea Football Club. Great Mourinho interview in the Daily Telegraph. He came out with a beautiful line. I have a problem. I'm getting better at everything. Which is it's like the most Bush League line from a job interview. What are your weaknesses, Dave? I care too much. I work too hard. I'm yeah. too good a colleague.
Oh, I'm a perfectionist.
Yeah, but
I'm just too hard on myself.
Out of Mourinho's mouth.
Yeah.
It seems wonderfully brilliant and menacing. And because of this, David, this entire season, I think is now a setup just for the storylines of next season and the Premier League, in which United and Arsenal will believe they can win again and post-op Manchester City will wake up from their summer hibernation having, quote, had some work done. Another great Jose Mourinho quote, he admits that commercial deals do play a part in buying players at Chelsea. They've got a new shirt sponsor. I know you're very proud of Yokohama Tyres, David.
I do love the city of Yokohama. Spent a lot of time there in 2002, Roger.
Well, you'll be pleased. They're now trying to buy Japanese star Yoshinori Mutu, who you have talked about a lot, really coveted.
Not related to Adrian Mutu.
And when I read that, David, I just wondered why no one at Chevy has made United put in a bid for Jose Altidore.
It hasn't happened.
Do it. America, it's also, love you.
Mourinho's post-match press conference, Rog. A very unexpected reaction to the launching of missiles at the Chelsea players from sections of the QPR crowd. Something that we would never encourage, something we'd never think is a good idea. Bottles, cigarette lighters, pound coins thrown. You'd think this would be an opportunity for Jose Mourinho to go and stick the boot in. Instead, he refuses to denounce the QPR fans and says, you know, everybody needs a pound. That was his answer to the whole thing. He's just unexpected.
He told his players he's not unexpected. When he doesn't fear someone, he's charming.
Yeah. Maybe. Anyway, I don't agree it's completely over. There are two huge games coming up the next two weekends in the Premier League. Chelsea have got to play Manchester United. They've got to play Arsenal. Chelsea could conceivably lose both of those games. If they lose both of those games, it's still wide open. We've got a very, very close Premier League. This is the beauty of the Premier League script being written, Rog. Tottenham, 0. Aston Villa, 1. Another great day for the scriptwriters, Rog. Tim Sherwood returns to the team that rejected him to Tottenham. They fired him less than a year ago, Rog, at the end of the season when he failed to take them into Europe. He gleefully delivers a blow to Tottenham's top four hopes. Belgian striker Christian Benteke has continued his fine form. He headed home in the 35th minute to see Villa 6 points clear of the relegation zone. What an amazing, amazing few weeks it's been for Tim Sherwood.
Oh, this was less a game of football. It's more like watching a remake of The Notebook. I wrote you 365 letters. Poor Tim Sherwood. Let go at Spurs for bringing him in six. And then having to come back with shoddy old Aston Villa and seeing proud tummy tuck Pochettino in his place. I can't imagine the emotions of rejection he must have been grappling with, Dave. Have you ever been ditched by someone you loved and had to deal with the pain?
I don't know if I've ever been rejected in this way. This was a team that he used to play for. He played for passionately, and then he managed. And he also managed pretty well. I mean, nobody ever thought that Tim Sherwood was a tactical genius, but sixth seemed to be about their position in terms of the players they had on the field last season to go and do it. Don't think I've ever experienced anything like that, Rog.
Well, being fired as a professional manager and then having to come back with another team as their professional manager.
I've actually never been fired. It's the one thing I've never experienced in my life.
Can I imagine Tim Sherwood loves Spurs, David?
Yeah.
I imagine you more as the breaker offer than the breaky or...
Or the slowly fade-outer.
Yeah. Slowly being a euphemism for quite quick.
Yeah.
Because all I know about those emotions, David, are from watching Grease, when Cha-Cha cuts in on Sandy to dance with Danny in the hand jive scene. Tim Sherwood, to me, is very, very, very Sandy. And he looks like a man who'd kind of prepared for this game. Instead of doing tactics with his team, he'd been reading articles like how to deal with rejection in love and what to do when he doesn't love you back. And it worked, Dave. It really did work. And it worked as he said it would, because before the game, he was laughed at when he said, at the moment, with Christian Benteke banging the goals in like he is and Gabby, a bong lahore, playing like he is, I don't think I'd have room for Harry Kane in the Aston Villa starting 11.
Yeah, a man he discovered.
Yep. And it turned out to be prophetic, Davo, because the much derided Cleverley and the highly coveted Delph ran the midfield in this game. Benteke banged in his 8th goal in 6 league games with a glancing header, and then just that beautiful cutaway to Tim Sherwood on the sideline, a man never afraid to let his emotion, his freak flag fly. The most demonstrative manager, can we say, in the Premier League. And what did he do?
Suddenly so cool, Roger. So
didn't
cool.
move a muscle.
Nothing. Refuses to celebrate.
Merely sup water, despite the fact that he was having multiple orgasms on the inside.
Yep, while simultaneously wetting himself, as I said last night.
And then a beautiful moment, 11 minutes to go. DeAndre Yedlin.
Yes, the DeAndre Yedlin era, Rog. That could be it.
What, the glorious 11 minutes?
Yeah, that could be it.
Which he trotted on. We want a throw-in specialist. Let's put on DeAndre.
Well, it was a very good throw-in, Rog. You have to say that.
Jurgen Klinsmann would have loved. How much would Jurgen Klinsmann have loved?
Yeah, he's coming to be the throw-in specialist. Americans are good at throwing the ball.
He would have loved it, but not as much as Sherwood loved that victory. He barely gloated post-game. He used a very complicated sentence structure to say, Tottenham chairman Daniel Levy made the decision to sack me. Without Spurs giving me the job last year, I wouldn't have been here today to enjoy this win. A sentence that makes me wonder, David, do you believe in karma?
Not really.
Why not? Because I don't. I'd love to believe in karma.
Yeah. There's so many things would be different in the world if karma existed.
Feels like a mental trick to deal with the punishing grind of life. But when I did, Davo, watch this game, I thought of the words of Daisuke Ikeda. Mm-hmm. The Buddhist philosopher that we both love so much.
Yeah. Even if Chelsea might be in for him.
Even if things don't unfold the way you expected, don't be disheartened or give up. One who continues to advance will win in the end. And on this day, it was Tim Sherwood. If you're a Spurs fan, Davey, do you hope the team now just completely tail off and avoid the Europa League blight that scuppered the start of this season?
I don't know. I think Spurs fans are still dreaming of making the Champions League. Roger, only 7 points behind Man City. And I think still playing better football than them. So we'll see. Okay, the other side of North London, Rog, Arsenal. They travel up to Burnley. They win 1-0. Aaron Ramsey's 12th minute goal gives Arsenal its 8th straight Premier League win. Keeps Arsene Wenger's men in second place, 7 points behind Chelsea. At the other end of the table, Burnley. They continue to take on water. They're in 19th place, Rog, 2 points shy of safety right now.
Winning ugly for the most handsome team in football.
Yep.
The story I loved in this one was that the new Bishop of Burnley, the Right Reverend Philip North, revealed this week he'd been praying for Sean Dyche's team to stay in the Premier League, only to then accidentally reveal before kickoff that he was actually an Arsenal fan. I'll be discussing this issue in depth on my other podcast, Today in Modern Theology.
Yeah.
But this victory for Arsenal, 15th in the last 18 fixtures, thanks to a Aaron Ramsey finish. He cleaned up the slop in the Burnley area. Terrific roof shot. This Burnley side, we love it. It never wilts. They stepped up their resistance. Ings and Vokes forced Ospina into athletic saves. I mean, I watched this game and I thought, if you bottle Burnley's spirit, work ethic and courage and melded it with half of Manchester City's budget,
you
probably have a top four side, David.
11 players who play like best friends to play for the badge. They outpassioned them.
In this game, they struggled gamefully without ever truly threatening David Ospina, 11 wins in 12 starts. He's quietly given Arsenal solidity after years struggling through Szczesny, Fabianski, Manuel, Almunia. Wenger said after the game, nothing's changed. We need a perfect run. We need a non-perfect run from them. He wouldn't even mention who them are, Davo, but we can't master that. We can only master our own position. Can they do it, Davo? Can they play
against Chelsea this season, Rog, in 2 weekends' time. So they do have some control over their destiny. And I sort of believe that it's not only about getting level with them. You get close. You get to within the striking distance. Chelsea have a bad result against Man United and a bad result against Arsenal. And it's wide open, Rog. Wide
Four
open.
Out of their last 6 games are at Fortress Emirates. Chelsea, as you say, one of the visitors. I have to say, this has been an odd season for Arsenal. Almost oxymoronic. They'll approach the next season with quiet confidence, but they must rue that kind of leaden-footed start to the season. It still feels like a whole lot of what-if. Incidentally, loads of you love Dave Fishwick in the last podcast, and we're thrilled to see the Dave Fishwick stand get such wide national exposure. I wonder how many phone calls Dave Fishwick minibus got from Americans who needed to rent something just by virtue of seeing it.
He doesn't rent them, he only sells them. He might help get you into a long-term lease.
Well, I can't wait to get him over to New York, actually, so we can do some more work with him. At Scott Calvert tweeted us to say, can't believe Burnley only has 65,000 people. There are 125 different cities in California that are bigger. Wow. Could each of them support a Premier League team?
Yeah, probably. Liverpool 2, Newcastle 0, Rog. A Muggsy Bogue-sized score sheet at Anfield as Smalls, Raheem Sterling and Joe Allen tally to keep Liverpool's top four hopes very much alive. Liverpool sit just 4 points behind City, as I said earlier, for the final Champions League spot, Rog.
Yeah, it was a strange atmosphereless game. It almost felt like a friendly. I mean, Newcastle team, their major promise to their fans this season seems to be that they exist. And it ended in a routine, much-needed Liverpool win to numb the gaping wound left by that 4-1 dismantling dispensed by Arsenal. The Liverpool love Newcastle. They've gone 20 straight home games undefeated against them. The only club that have gone longer, Dave, is Chelsea against Tottenham. All of Liverpool's stories right now seem to revolve around Raheem Sterling.
Yeah.
He's just is he a footballer or is he a case study of how England destroy those that they love most?
Yeah, it's interesting. All of the controversy about Raheem Sterling still refusing to commit to a new contract at Liverpool. But I thought he performed well in this game. He came out and I think he won the cop over with his aggression, with his assertiveness, Rog, and frankly with his passion playing for the shirt.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just the stories about the contract. He's negotiating very publicly and some would say in a distinctly ill-advised fashion with the club, doing interviews on the BBC where he talks about the money that he needs and where he needs to achieve in his career. But now the Sun has a lead story today about the 20-year-old inhaling nitrous oxide. By the way, I don't have a problem with any player who inhales nitrous oxide.
No, it's funny.
If they want to sound like Wayne Rooney, I say let them.
Yeah.
But he was also photographed over the weekend smoking, Davo, a shisha pipe.
Yeah.
Which the Daily Mirror in a caps headline said is as strong as 200 cigarettes.
Yeah. Well, look, I don't think that Raheem Sterling, in essence, is any different than other footballer. And I don't like the destruction of him by the press. And I can't help but believe that Liverpool Football Club aren't at least, if not behind the attacks on him personally, loving the fact that the press are obsessing on this. But this is the problem that Liverpool got themselves into by paying Mario Balotelli, Adam Lallana so much more than they were playing Raheem Sterling. And frankly, you know what? He's rejected a contract that will pay him the same amount that Liverpool are already paying Mario Balotelli. And I think you look at it from Raheem Sterling and his agent's point of view, he's a much better player than Mario Balotelli at this point.
And whatever he's smoking, Dave, it worked.
Yeah, it does.
He scored a goal which is beautiful as poetry. Yeah. He honestly could have had a hat-trick. Only a sudden acid flashback, and it probably was an acid flashback, could have been to blame for him missing an open goal from within the six-yard area. It was a piece of clumsy play that could only be described as Dejan Lovren-esque. But this Liverpool side, amazing, David. Momentum is perception for them this season. At the beginning of the season, the papers had the knives out for Brendan Rodgers. Then he became a genius again and the team were just playing buoyant football in that unbeaten run. Mm-hmm. Last week, the newspapers wrote again that Rodgers is facing a dressing room crisis. Several players are not playing for me, said their kind of fake headlines. But City's lost this weekend. It's given Liverpool hope again of a Champions League place, Dave. Narrative flip after narrative flip. The squad's young and soaked in menace. And one minute, the next, they're racked by injury and want away selfishness. It is fascinating, Dave. I don't know really which they are. They're less a team. They're more an optical illusion that looks either like a beautiful woman or an old terrifying hag, depending on the POV of the viewer.
Yeah, you're so right. And the shifting narratives apply to almost every single team in the top seven, from Chelsea in top down to Tottenham in seventh, Rog. Well, if the race for the top four is House of Cards, the relegation zone looks more like the final episodes of The Bachelorette, with flawed characters risking life and limb to ensure survival, Rog. West Brom 2, Leicester City 3. 2 goals in the last 10 minutes, including a Jamie Vardy injury time winner. He had an amazing weekend.
Counter-attacking.
Moved the Foxes to within 3 points of safety. Waxing and waning. They remain in last place, but have a game in hand on all those above them and 2 games in hand on QPR. Southampton 2, Hull City 0. Steve Bruce's men suffer defeat at St Mary's after a horrifically timed tackle by Steve Bruce's son, Alex. It gives the Saints a penalty in the 56th minute. Graziano Pelle, back on the score sheet, Rog. He added a second in the 80th minute, breaking a 15-game Premier League scoring drought. Unflattering vacation photos. Now the least of Steve Bruce's problems with his side within 2 points of relegation.
Alex Bruce is a defender who has only ever gotten Premier League starts when his dad was managing the team which he's playing for. And his dad, after this one, he gave away a clumsy penalty, gave him a tongue-lashing. He said it was a silly challenge from a lad of his experience. We've been punished. It's cost us the game. And I've got to ask you, Davo, as a father yourself,
yeah,
why would you play a player who just simply can never be motivated to excel when you know for sure what life has got in store for you, that you're going to turn into Steve Bruce? How bothered can you be?
When
you just succumb. You just succumb to the pie.
Yeah.
Just succumb to the pie now, son.
Yeah.
By the way, talking of pie, one of my favourite MLS stories of the week. DC United have a strategic partnership with Premier League team Sunderland.
Wow.
I can't understand why anyone would have any kind of strategic partnership with Sunderland.
Yeah.
It's about as useful as being lost at sea and developing a strategic partnership with someone with scurvy who's drowning.
Well, it's just the use of the word strategic that seems to be a little bit of a misnomer there, Rog.
Well, wait till you hear about
it. Based on my understanding of the word strategic, that does not seem to be that strategic.
Wait till you hear what the content of the strategic partnership is.
Yeah.
It's a food swap.
Oh, I love it.
Sunderland are serving cheesesteak to their fans.
Uh-huh.
As if that's somehow synonymous with the DC area.
Yeah.
And DC United is now selling a steak and ale pie, which they describe, quote, as a signature staple of British cuisine.
Yeah.
Which must be a euphemism for this product contains horse meat.
I also have a problem with the word cuisine in that sentence, Rog. Okay. Talking of Sunderland, Rog, they go down 4-1 to the Super Eagles, Crystal Palace. A Yannick Bolasie hat-trick. God, how good is he? Under Pardew, Rog. Sends scores of Black Cats fans heading for the exit well before the final whistle. Sunderland now just a point above Hull.
Yeah, I mean, when he was simply mild-mannered sack Alan Pardew, Sunderland beat Newcastle, is Newcastle, 4 straight times.
Yeah.
He's just tweaked his name. Call me Super Alan Pardew.
Yeah.
And they're unstoppable. The game was essentially over just after the second half began, and we were treated to the now familiar sight of Sunderland fans leaving early.
Yeah.
Which always makes me wonder, where on earth do Sunderland fans have to rush to? they live in Sunderland, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Is it just a case of pies to eat, beer doesn't drink itself?
Yeah, maybe. Pubs are very comfy in that part of the world, Rog. To the mid-table, where much like the Men in Blazers show, the only people still watching are those who accidentally left the TV on, Rog. West Ham 1, Stoke City 1. Austrian striker Marco Arnautovic's injury time goal rescues a point for the Potters after a terrific free kick from former Ipswich Town man Aaron Cresswell. Thank you, producer JW. Big Ipswich fan, had put the Hammers up early. Aaron Cresswell could be going to Chelsea if you believe the rumours, Rog. Swansea 1, Everton 1. Aaron Lennon gave Everton a 1-0 lead in the 41st minute, but a Jonjo Shelvey, I'm sorry, Rog, EA Sports FIFA-esque penalty kick levelled the score in the 69th minute. Rog, how did you feel about this game?
Oh, I'm in a bit of a quandary right now, Davey.
Yeah, go ahead.
As I mentioned
many
times, to the point of boredom,
I've
realised late in the season, if I don't watch Everton, they do not lose.
Yeah.
And I didn't watch again. And again, they came home with a point against Swansea. It's all very well. But I've got to tell you, making this ultimate sacrifice, and when they're about to kick off, I get hundreds of tweets from people being like, you're not watching, are you, Rog? You're not watching. And I'm not, because I don't want to do what I did when I watched them play in the Europa League and they got absolutely obliterated.
Yeah.
I didn't watch. But I realised this weekend, Davo, it's dawned on me, I think I prefer to watch Everton lose than not watch them and have them win.
Oh, but how about if they draw?
I prefer to watch Everton lose than to not watch them and have them do anything. It just destroys
me. Okay, so that brings me back. So what is the point right now? What is the definition of enjoyment watching Everton right now? What do you get out of the games now, win, lose or draw, by watching it? Because for me, as somebody who sees the point of sport as winning things or avoiding losing things, as in going down. What is the point of watching a team finish mid-table? How should we encourage our fans who love their teams? How do you encourage them to just, in a non-playoff based system where they're not even trying to get into the eighth position to go and make the playoffs, how do we encourage them to continue to watch when you end in mid-table and nothing happens?
Football is not about winning.
Yeah.
When I went to the football game in Israel with an old mate of mine, Dan Harvard.
Yeah.
Big Arsenal fan. Mm-hmm. And he told me once, I was watching all the Israeli fans get so pent up about the game, unbelievable atmosphere.
Yeah.
And I was like, what, you know, ultimately, what does this game mean for these people when there's like, you know, bigger leagues, which they follow avidly, the Premier League. Like, yeah. Why are these people so obsessed with this? And he said to me that once he went as a kid to watch Arsenal play Liverpool, and the man behind him, when Arsenal scored, screamed out his instant reaction to the goal. He just screamed out, "Take that, Gloria!" And Dan, who was a little kid then, just turned around to this guy and said, "Excuse me, who's Gloria?" And the guy, slightly embarrassed, said to him, "I'm sorry, it's my ex-wife. She was from Liverpool."
So that's it.
That's why I watch Everton Football Club.
But I'm not talking about every week.
It's for that release, Dave. And without watching, football is where my whole life is processed and meaning is found. And without it, I'm nothing.
But at the beginning of the season, I understand there's hope. In the middle of the season, still there's a bit of hope. At the point that you're trying to escape the danger of relegation, there is importance. But I'm talking about at this point of the season where you know that it finishes mid-table. You know the ending right now. What is the point of watching when you know the ending?
You're not listening to me. Take that glory. Okay, that is the point.
I'll try and understand it. I'm going to have to think about this very, very hard, Rog. Okay, huge game coming up, Rog, in San Antonio, Wednesday. Tomorrow for us right now, it could be today when you're listening to this. The Von Trapps are going to take on Mexico. Our great mate, a GFOP, Miguel Herrera. Jurgen Klinsmann has selected a squad that has the potential to produce a Men in Blazers dream midfield, Rog, of Kyle Beckerman and Mix Discarood. Clint Dempsey, however, is out with a hamstring strain, and Josie will serve his one-match suspension for his insanely gained red card in Switzerland.
I'm a bit worried about that midfield, Mix and Kyle.
Yeah.
They are. If you look at them, the hair is like the different elements of Velcro.
Yeah.
You know, little hooks.
Yes.
And the softer kind of mesh that goes onto those hooks. I think they kind of put problems together.
Static.
I love those two men. Yeah. It's an odd game. It takes place outside the FIFA window. The big question is, who's going to play at striker? No Josie, no Clint. Juan Aguadelo makes a return to the US men's national team after a year's absence. He's like a child actor trying to catch on as a serious normal-age thespian. He's the Mayim Bialik of US soccer. Julian Green and DeAndre Yedlin have both been released by their clubs, which is extremely unusual. I guess a sign of how low down the pecking order they are at Hamburg and Spurs. It'll be great to see Julian, though. He made his debut for the US against Mexico a year ago in Phoenix. What an emotional roller coaster of a year he's had since then. Here's how I project the game will go, David. The US will score early.
Yeah.
Then ship a couple of late goals.
Yeah.
It will feel like the roof is caving in. Jurgen will just smile, praise Miguel Ibarra's late cameo, and they'll talk a lot about the Gold Cup.
The game, 8:30 Eastern Time. That's Wednesday on Fox Sports 1. Maybe they'll put Wijnaldum at striker, Rog. That will really help tie it into the studio show.
Oh, with Rob Stone playing right behind him.
I doubt that he'll make the team. Okay, in an MLS, Rog, some other exciting football news for fans in America. Could Zlatan be daring to MLS?
Well, there's a lot of talk about Zlatan because he applied for a long-term US visa, which has got a lot of people incredibly excited at the prospect of the man who's gone from Ajax to Milan to Barcelona to PSG, finally ending up at Columbus Crew. A big team, finally, for Zlatan. I mean, it could be that he wants to come to MLS, David.
He plays well in
yellow. Could be that he wants to come. Or like Sir Alex Ferguson, he might just be a really keen student of Civil War history. Yeah. What a tour of the battlefield.
Yeah, you never know.
I'd love to tour the battlefields with you one day, David.
Oh, I can't wait to do it. I really want to go to Gettysburg.
Do you think NBC Sports would do a series where we walk around battlefields?
Unlikely.
It's the only reason I'm going to Euro 2016. I hope they're playing some games at Dunkirk and Normandy.
Okay, Rog, our guest today, a football fan, Saka, with her own star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. That's a first for us. She's the executive producer of AMC's The Walking Dead,
a documentary about Sunderland Football Club.
Exactly. And the show's upcoming spin-off series, Fear the Walking Dead. Ladies and gentlemen, that show needs a post-show, by the way. We welcome to the pod the first lady of sci-fi and an Arsenal supporter, Gail Ann Hurd.
I'm happy to be here. What can I say? My obsession is soccer.
We've got so much to talk to you about, because I think about you all the time. Every weekend, I mean, this weekend I was watching the Manchester Derby and I watched that final fatal close-up of a doomed Pellegrini ducking behind the wall, his eyes just roomy and sad. He looked 100% Walker.
He did. You know, I watched the match as well. I was really hoping for a draw. I was very disappointed that it was such a complete demolition of Man City. I wanted to take them to take each other down, and they didn't cooperate.
But what I wanted to ask you was, what attracted you to the Premier League in the first place? Is it the surplus narrative? It's like Game of Thrones with more violence and gratuitous nudity.
It was my husband, but it could have been the other. my husband grew up in London, a lifelong Arsenal fan, and he tried to get me to watch the matches during the Invincibles era. Mm-hmm. And I kept saying, who can watch soccer? It's so boring. Nothing happens. The scores are so low. And sadly, I started watching just as the team started to implode as they were paying off the debt for Ashburton Grove.
That's what you keep telling yourself. It wasn't that you started supporting them, that the fate of the club has plummeted.
No. There's no correlation whatsoever.
And so this season, you know, another trophy for Arsenal. They are winning the league in 2015, playing, I would say, some of the best football that we've seen Arsenal play in seasons. And yet, sitting there in second place behind, I have to admit, my beloved Chelsea. How are you feeling about the team this season? Are you pro-Wenger? Are you anti-Wenger? Where do you stand on the big issues?
I think Wenger is fantastic. I do think, like all managers, he has his blind spots. But what he's been able to do, even though people say his ambitions are low, but being a selling club for so long and still managing to finish in the top four and making the Champions League every year is a huge accomplishment. I mean, people with unlimited money to spend, Tottenham Hotspur, can't seem to do that.
Oh.
When I think of Arsenal, I think of a quote from The Walking Dead by Dale, that the world we know is gone, but keeping our humanity, that's a choice. You're the first lady of science fiction, so I have to ask you, can Arsenal win the title this season? Will they win it in our lifetime?
Well, I think that unfortunately it is all in the hands of your beloved Chelsea at the moment, and it doesn't look like they're going to lose sufficient number of games for us to take over. Of course, they're going to win the league. It's bound to happen, and I think that they've got the squad now that can compete and grind out those victories.
It's interesting. The one thing I would say about that is that Arsenal do have an epic game the weekend after next against Chelsea. It's at the Emirates. And it features, you know, the more interesting thing about this game is not actually the teams that line up against each other on the field. It's the two managers, the relationship between Wenger and Mourinho. Look, a lot of people in the Premier League don't like Mourinho, but what is it about the nature of Wenger's personality and Mourinho's personality that makes it so toxic between them, would you say?
It's funny. I mean, when you think of Wenger, he seems to me more, you know, German. I believe he's from Alsace-Lorraine. He's from the border between France and Germany. So he doesn't really feel that French to me. And Mourinho is so passionate. I mean, you know, the self-described special one. Whereas Wenger always says, you know, we're a little bit this, we're a little bit that. I don't think little bit ever features in a Jose Mourinho comment. He's all in.
Your Twitter picture, at Gunnar Gael, is of you and Rick Grimes, or should I say Love Actually's Andrew Lincoln. You're in an Arsenal jersey. you're on set at The Walking Dead. I love that photograph. Who do you talk football with on set?
Well, you know, it's hilarious because Andy was afraid to tell me for the first season that he was a Man U fan. And a diehard Man U fan, because I literally wore an Arsenal jersey to set almost every day. And I found out online. I found out on Twitter because I said, you know, Andy really doesn't follow soccer. And a Man U fan said, actually, he's a diehard Man U fan. So I took the tweet and showed it to him. And he said, yeah.
Actors need jobs. He obviously kept it from you for a reason. He didn't want to be killed off.
Yes, and it shows how benevolent I am that he's still around. But even more interesting, Lenny James, who plays Morgan, is such a Spurs fan that it's in his bio. Even when his bio is two paragraphs, he puts in that he's a die-hard Tottenham Hotspur fan.
Wow.
And when David Morrissey was on the show, he's a huge Liverpool fan. And now I'm really surrounded because Stephen Young, who plays Glenn, has decided to embrace Spurs as well.
Oh, brave move.
And I think he did it just in some sort of rebellious fashion.
Wow, brave, brave move.
Who's on the back of Gail Ann Hurd's jersey, the Arsenal jersey?
Ozil.
Oh, Mesut Ozil.
We've got a lot, big mailbag of our listeners who wrote to you, at Craig T. Rupp. He said, Gail, you're being chased by a Walker mob. Which former gunner would you offer first as a sacrifice to save your own skin? Would it be RVP, Samir Nasri, which is spelt with a little dollar sign, or Cesc Fabregas?
Well, you know,
and why?
Cesc wanted to come back to Arsenal, so I forgive him.
He's just a very bad speller.
Yeah.
I would have to say Van Persie.
Yes. Why? I agree with you, but why?
Because he says nasty things about the club now, and I'm just delighted when he doesn't score.
I think he'd make an excellent lurker. All they do is appear to be a corpse. They play dead and then spring up and bite you. I think that would be very, very RVP.
Also, he wouldn't make a very satisfying meal for a zombie.
And you know what? I want all that money back that we paid him when he was unable to play and injured.
I think he'd be a little gamey.
What, like, yeah. Like quail?
Like quail. Like pigeon.
I love pigeon. At Nolts Rebecca says, Gail Ann, we know you're very familiar with shipping in fan fiction, endorsing a romantic relationship. Who would you ship in the Premier League and why?
Who would I personally want to ship? I would say Olivier Giroud. Who would I like to see ship?
Yes, two together. Who would you, if you were writing the narrative of the Premier League, which you may well do and you just keep it silent from us, I've got a feeling you do.
I don't know. I think that the two hunks on the team are Giroud and Ramsey.
They make beautiful babies.
Yeah. Wouldn't they?
They would.
Yeah.
They would.
There's been great affection between the French and Welsh people over the centuries as well. I think we could see that happen.
I'd ship Mourinho and Louis van Gaal. They're the Tom Hanks and Meg
Ryan
of the
EPL. You don't need to ship it. They're so in love with each other. We'll see that this weekend.
They're like Sleepless in Seattle. I do hope they get to second base during the managerial handshake this weekend. Have you ever looked at Martin Skrtel and thought, wow, there's an AMC series you could produce in which he'd star.
Could be Igor, right? in Frankenstein or something.
I honestly think he's wasting his talents as a professional footballer. He could be the Bela Lugosi of our generation.
All over Hollywood, people are saying, we need a Skrtel type for this role.
Yeah,
we need
Ron
a Skrtel
Cheney.
Type. Yeah, we need it. Or a Diego Costa type would be the same thing.
Where do you watch your games, Gail?
Well... Now that I can watch it at home, I tend to watch it at home. It used to be that I would, you know, go to the Fox and the Hounds.
Oh, yeah.
Here in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And in certain countries where the matches are not available in a, you know, when I'm staying in a hotel, the first thing that I will do is find the closest pub that's playing the matches, and I will be... You know, the woman in the red Arsenal jersey, the middle-aged American woman, which tends to shock just about everyone, showing up, screaming at the television.
With Mesut Ozil's name.
Yes.
Back.
Yes, and I watch in Atlanta at the Brewhouse Cafe.
Nice.
And you know, and I've watched matches in Rio de Janeiro. I've watched matches throughout the United States.
You're producing television. You're producing television. You told us in Melbourne,
Australia,
in Atlanta, in New York City,
and Vancouver.
Oh, wow. Have you ever thought about locating one of your shows in like Aston Villa? You wouldn't even have to dress up the walkers. You just shoot the people on the normal people in the street. They wouldn't even need to know that they're in a show. Just shoot them.
Gellan, look, we probably love The Walking Dead here at Embassy Row. In full disclosure, we do produce the post-show to The Walking Dead, The Talking Dead. You are the Alec Baldwin of that series. I think you and Greg Nicotero have probably done the show more times than anybody else. Talk to us a little bit about Fear the Walking Dead. We're all excited to go and see the new spin-off.
Well, as you know, I can only talk about what's already been released, but it's a companion series rather than a spin-off in that it follows new characters that have never appeared on The Walking Dead. It takes place in Los Angeles, and it, if you will, it's almost like a prequel following different characters in that it takes place at the very early stages of the outbreak. Obviously, if you watch The Walking Dead, you know that we picked it up when Rick Grimes wakes up from a coma after, you know, about 4 weeks from the time that the outbreak started. And so we've, except in a few flashbacks, we've only seen very little of the beginning of the outbreak. So we'll be able to really see how a city like Los Angeles falls.
Oh, I can't wait. There's rumors about that. I don't know if you can comment on this or not. I don't mean to put you on the spot, that Martin Skirtle is going to star in Fear the Walking Dead. Can you confirm or deny?
You know, if it was up to me, I'd certainly rather have him on the show than playing for Liverpool.
Yeah, certainly he's been good. Gail Ann Hurd, thank you so much. Good luck in all of your endeavors, and good luck to Arsenal. I've played some fantastic football this season. I still think the title's not over. I mean, of course, I have been trolling people by saying it's Arsenal's title to lose. But,
thanks so much for that.
But the Premier League scriptwriters, who I know all report to you now, I think that the big Arsenal-Chelsea game is still going to have something to do with deciding this season.
What's your drink of choice, Gail?
Well, you know, unfortunately, at 6 in the morning, I tend not to be picking up a pint.
So Jägermeister. So we will buy you a Jägermeister or pint of your choice when you're in New York for your show. We cannot wait to meet you in person and watch a game. We love having you on. Your passion, your love, your just undestroyable hope in this creature, Arsenal Football Club, fills all of us with complete joy, as does your Twitter handle, and we're lucky to have you on.
Well, thank you so much. I'm a huge fan of yours, and look forward to hoisting a pint with you back in New York City.
Keep walking.
And keep talking.
Oh, good one. Thanks, Caroline. Lovely woman, Rog.
Oh, David, sorry I've put her on the spot about Martin Skirtle.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be magnificent, though, now. Definitely tuning in.
Yes, Rog, I won't be surprised if Martin Skirtle ends up with a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Be the Vinnie Jones of our generation.
Yeah, it'd be amazing. Okay, Rog, your Gingy 11. Our quest to eradicate the world of anti-Gingyism continues. Rog, you've been playing a lot of EA Sports FIFA 15 lately. You've created a FIFA Ultimate Team comprised solely of gingers. The starting 11 is posted on meninblazers.com, includes Stephen Quinn, Dax McCarty, and even Marouane Fellaini. Here's a bit of a streak, Rog. We're asking GFOPs to visit our site, take a look at our team, and write a Twitter-sized match report for Rog's Gingy 11 versus an opponent of your choice. Send them to us using the hashtag RogersGinge11. That's R-O-G-S-G-I-N-G.
Oh, I wish I had a real Gingy 11.
11, Roman numerals.
I love a Gingy 11.
Our favourite wins a special FUT man of the match, Kevin De Bruyne.
Oh, David, I've got to say, this week I put together an imaginary EA Sports FUT team.
Okay.
It's the Game of Thrones national team.
Oh, good idea.
Been so overstimulated by the return of that show, which I love almost as much as the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read out very quick.
Okay, go ahead.
Hodor in goal.
Like it.
Grey Worm, Oberyn Martell, mm-hmm. left back and right back. Mm-hmm. Jon Snow, Tormund Giants Bane, a world-class centre-back partnership. Bronn, Gregor Clegane, Arya and Cersei in midfield. Mm-hmm. I feel like Gregor and Arya is that a glimpse of what Paul Pogba and David Silva will be like in City's midfield next season? And then up front, Daenerys, the mother of dragons, playing behind her beloved old deceased husband, Khal Drogo. It'll be unstoppable. I love this team. I've got to say, under the coaching eye of Sir Barristan Selmy, I believe they could take on all comers and possibly do to Germany what Germany did to Brazil.
Talking of the mother of dragons, on last night's TV show, we translated Game of Thrones into their sort of Premier League equivalent characters. And the mother of dragons, you made Rebecca Lowe. Yeah. I awoke to an email from Rebecca this morning saying, okay, what have you two been up to? What was this mean? I don't watch Game of Thrones. I don't understand. I said, look, I don't watch Game of Thrones either, Rebecca, but I believe this is a great compliment to be the mother of dragons.
Yeah,
in
she
Premier
emailed
League
me that also. 11. And you, when you answered, I just played dumb. I was going to explain to her that it's an incredible compliment to be a young, innocent in a far-off land who was cruelly matched with a tribal leader who took her innocence in a fairly violent fashion, but then she found love.
Yeah.
And then her beloved was killed by a sorceress, mm-hmm. and she threw some dormant dragon eggs on that pyre. And the dragon heads hatched the first in centuries. Are you with me,
Rebecca? Robbies? Are they robbies? Are they robbies? Are the robbies the dragons?
Okay. There were three. So maybe it is Robbie and Kyle.
Kyle,
a slightly different dragon that marches to the beat of its own dragon
he's
drum.
Some work done.
And then stay with me, Rebecca, who doesn't watch Game of Thrones and doesn't get quite... This is a great compliment, Rebecca.
I've never listened to the podcast.
You then took this ragtag bunch of characters and just built an unbelievable army which was reinforced by thousands of eunuchs.
Yeah.
I just, when you just said, I don't know, but
that's
it's a compliment,
NBC Sports.
I just thought there's just no better way for me to play dumb and keep my mouth shut.
Okay, perfect.
Thank God she doesn't listen to our crap.
Our first Raven, Rog, is from Chris Nutter in Sunnyvale, California. Dear Positive and Toilet, my brother-in-law is a big Newcastle fan. Back in 2011, was hoping the Magpies would get relegated as divine justice after Mike Ashley temporarily rebranded St James's Park as the Sports Direct Arena. That raises a big question. Can one or should one ever wish their team ill for the greater good of the club? Can you ever wish bad upon your club for the greater good of it? Under what circumstances is this permissible as a fan?
It's amazing. You can't even begin to answer that question because football's about winning.
I think there are times under the leadership of Big Phil and of Avram Grant where I wanted
the only Jewish manager ever of Chelsea.
It was nothing to do with his religion, Rog, where there are times when I just wanted them to lose because I didn't want them to be at the club anymore.
It's so interesting.
Yeah.
Because to me, football fandom is emotional, and what the question is really asking is, can you ever be rational about football fandom? And I'd say, apart from Take That Gloria, I'd say that Newcastle is such a remarkable club, and its place in the city is so central, and the fans and the city are so unbelievable in their history, their culture, their passion. There's an amazing article by David Conn in The Guardian, which is worth looking at, where he's described what Mike Ashley has done to the club, how he stripped it and made it bereft of everything that made it remarkable. Michael Martin, one of the Supporters Trust board members, wrote that Newcastle are now a zombie club, half alive, half dead, going nowhere. Sounds like something that Gail Ann Hurd would be very interested in. And all I'd say is the city, the club and the fans, they deserve to be free. So I'd root for anything that would rid the club of owner Mike Ashley for what he's done to this once proud club.
Yeah, very true, Rog, but at the same time, not everyone can win the Premier League. The winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Soccer Scribe, Raven of the Week is Jesse Dorsey. Ever since Sir Alex Ferguson retired, I've been trying to make sense of the status of managers in the Premier League and how they relate to one another now that there is no supreme ruler of the bunch. After a few years of evaluation, I've come to find that every manager fits into three groups, and managerial moves can be predetermined based on these three categories. Okay, interesting. Every Premier League manager bears resemblance to either A, an early 20th century boxer, B, a recently retired Formula One driver, or C, a 17th century composer. Each group looking as follows. Boxers, Big Sam, Nigel Pearson, John Carver, Steve Bruce, Sean Dyche, Gary Monk, Ronald Koeman, Chris Ramsey, and Dick Advocaat. F1 drivers, Jose Mourinho, of course, Roberto Martinez, Mark Hughes, Mauricio Pochettino, Tony Pulis, Tim Sherwood, and Brendan Rodgers. Nose of a boxer, ego of an F1 driver, was the note. Composers, Arsene Wenger, Manuel Pellegrini, Louis van Gaal, and Alan Pardew. A composer. Tim Sherwood looked so much like a Formula One driver, and Hawkeye from the Avengers for that matter, that he was always going to end up back in the Premier League. It's also why QPR couldn't fire Harry Redknapp, clear boxer. Gus Poyet will be back, he's an F1 driver, and Paul Lambert, Alan Irvin, and Neil Warnock were sacked, non-fitters. Oh, I think Neil Warnock's got a little bit of a look of a composer, of sort of a Baroque 17th century composer. It follows that the most likely candidates for promotion will be Mick McCarthy's Ipswich Town, boxer's name, steel-eyed F1 gaze, Steve McLaren's Derby, a boxing Gary Busey, and Aitor Karanka's Middlesbrough, a composing wunderkind. Use this information with good intentions, GFOP and future Men in Blazers national team second choice keeper, Jesse Dorsey. It's an interesting theory.
Oh, you're brilliant,
I like it.
Jesse.
I like it.
You're brilliant. But I don't believe a word of it. It's all nonsense. Total nonsense. You got the categories wrong. It's Pulis, Steve Bruce, Big Sam.
Yeah.
They're all plumbers.
Yeah.
Tim Sherwood on his own, painter decorator.
Yeah.
Sean Dyche, security truck driver that cruises around banks taking cash at closing time. Nigel Pearson, slightly menacing truck mate who carries the gun. I think Alan Pardew, what did he say he was?
He said that he was a composer.
Nonsense. He's a life model. He's made a lot of money life modelling.
Yeah.
He does it. He'd do it for free. It's just a hobby. I love it. I can't believe I get paid to do what I love so much. Ronald Koeman, moderately successful European pornographer.
Mm-hmm.
Martinez Pochettino, vice squad cops churning out their careers in the dark side of the Valencia police force.
Mm-hmm.
As for Arsene Wenger, Jose Mourinho, Brendan Rodgers. All I can think of, Dave, when I think about what their lives would be if they were not managers, is that all three of them would be incarcerated in a maximum security psychiatric hospital.
Yeah, it seems likely.
Very true. Very true, Rog.
Your weekend looks like this. Everton versus Burnley, 10 a.m. Chelsea versus Manchester United, 12:30. That's on the network NBC. And City versus West Ham, 8:30 a.m. Sunday on NBCSN. You'll be back watching Everton, Rog, wherever they are. And in an MLS, the Philadelphia Union versus New England. That's 5 p.m. Sunday on ESPN2. Last week, we released Men in Blazers Unbuttoned. Now that's what I call Suboptimal Volume 2, the best of 2014 on iTunes, Amazon, and Google Play. It's the most suboptimal moments from a year in which Liverpool nearly won the league and the USA nearly won the World Cup. Have a listen. And then a sad nap. Check out our Spotify account, men_.
Number one in the iTunes comedy
underscore chart. Blazers. It must be a bad week in comedy.
Well, I think Bill Cosby was number two.
men_in_blazers, our third mixtape, the sad nap edition, will be released in the newsletter later this week. There are many other ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon, Frightens Big or Small, just click off the Emporium page. MIB gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you putting into the Emporium this week, Roger?
A book.
Oh, you love books.
I do. And when I was in Israel, I read a bunch of novels by a Palestinian Israeli writer called Syed Kashua.
Mm-hmm.
He's a wonderful, concise, self-aware bloke who mines that intersection of humour and pathos. His famous book is Dancing Arabs, which is very good. But I love the book he wrote called Let It Be Morning. It's a slice of human magic that will make one eye shed a tear of laughter and the other a tear of sadness. You love a tear of sadness.
I love
don't
a tear
you,
of sadness, Roger. I also love a high quality golf glove. I'm putting in the Titleist 2015 Player's Glove in a size cadet, medium large. That's the size I wear, Rog. A bargain at only $16.66. You know, the thing is with golf gloves, Rog, for just a couple dollars more, you can buy a superior golf glove made of superior leather. And I'm finding, especially as I get older, and I need my hands, need my short game a little bit more. The superior golf glove is very important, that superior leather. I would still like Titleist, if anybody's listening from Titleist, to go back and make a tan or brown leather golf glove again. That's what I really want, but I buy in white for now. Thoughts? Observations?
No, why the tan?
I think there's... I remember when I started playing golf, the old guys at my golf club in England would wear tan golf gloves. It used to be a thing. People would wear white golf gloves, tan golf gloves, or black golf gloves. They just do not seem to exist anymore, tan golf gloves. And it's a shame.
What do you
it's
wear on the course? Do you wear a nipple-tingling kind of Rory McIlroy? You're a Rory McIlroy kind of guy.
No, I don't wear modern. I don't wear newfangled golf clothes, really. Oh, like me, outerwear, I do.
I wear plus fours.
I like good rain protection. Golf. I would like to wear plus fours. Oh, I'm thinking of getting a move to tweed golf outfit for next season. The tweed jacket, wear a full-on tie and shirt, and plus fours. I think it'll look good.
Yeah, I wear plus fours around the house on the weekend.
It's good. It's a great look, Rog. You can also go and look at our Wikispaces, Rog, meninblazers.wikispaces.com/ that's a wonder of the modern world. You can go to our website, meninblazers.com. You can sign up for our newsletter. Rog mentioned it earlier. The Raven, we produced that with our partner Guinness. Follow us on Twitter, @meninblazers, @RogBennett, @EmbassyDavies. On Instagram, that's meninblazers or embassy_Davies. And like us on Facebook. We've got a subreddit. meninblazers.reddit.com. That's maintained by GFOP's Akshay, Calvin and Alex. You can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can email us at meninblazers@gmail.com.
We got a Periscope.
Oh, we got a Periscope. Wait a minute, Periscope.
Periscope's going up this week.
I don't know what Periscope is, but we have one.
We're going to Periscope up and then we're going to pop it
down. Oh, we are? I don't know what it is.
Have you not watched Das Boot?
Das Boot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know what a periscope is in a submarine, Rog. I just have no idea what periscope. I know we've done a few periscopes. I still have no idea what it is. Find it difficult. Vendorpunk, Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Exposure.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
Lean to linen.
A brigado. Rock on, mate.
Kung fu fight in America.
We outpassion them.
Love you, David.
Love you, Rog.
Love you, Gloria.
Just a quick final one from me. We know fans are emotional. They will love this tonight. Coaches are meant to be cold and analytical. Do you enjoy it more, winning a game like this? Or is it just a win?
No. I enjoy it also much more, and I drink a glass of wine more. And, we shall have maybe a dinner in Wings again. So... Yeah, that I like. And now I can also go to Wings, because when you lose, you cannot go. Eh? You know that. Because then people are saying, what he is doing, he lost today. But now I have won, so I can go.